This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Demanded you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He could be really bullying. He could also be very charming. It was really gruesome. It wasn't a job. It was a life. He took over your life.
You had to have seen Diddy's face. He literally was like, what is even happening right now? His jaw was on the ground.
The legacy of Sean Combs, are you kidding me? What about all the women that we're hearing from, one after the next, woman of color that has gotten a beating from Sean Combs? No one seems to hear that. Could you show him the shots of that gash on Cassie's forehead?
Not sex trafficking.
The busted
that's
lip.
Violence.
And see, that's how
this
you win all your cases.
Case.
You say, hey, don't listen to that. Look over here.
Black eyes, fat lips, and I think many of us watching here all feel the same way. I mean, justice for Cassie, Nancy.
Bombshell tonight. TGIFD. Thank goodness it's Friday, Diddy, because this has been an incredible week in the courtroom. I'm talking about that multi-count federal indictment against Sean Combs being tried right now, United States versus Sean Combs, in the Monahan Federal Courthouse in Manhattan. Straight out to Lauren Conlon, standing by at the courthouse. Lauren, what happened today?
Today in court, we heard from the government cell phone expert, the forensic expert who did the extractions on Cassie Ventura's cell phone. He talked about extracting a significant amount of deleted data and why certain things would appear on the screen in evidence as we're seeing it. So, for example, a deleted text thread might not have certain users' names. So we've seen blanks, we've seen duplicate names, and he explained all of this away. After that, we heard testimony from Jane Doe, who is victim three. Now, Jane Doe described meeting Sean Combs early 2020, and she met him through a friend while they were on a girls' trip. And she testified that this friend was once in a relationship with Diddy, so she kind of kept her distance. They exchanged numbers, and from there, they began a relationship after her friend moved on. And she actually talked about the fact that she was in a relationship with Sean Combs from 2020 all the way up until his arrest. Now, Jane Doe testified that the relationship truly started off as a fairy tale. He took her away to Turks and Caicos and then the Bahamas, but he also offered her $10,000 after this trip. He said, you know, I know that you haven't been able to work while you're on this trip, so here's some money. She talked about being a content creator, so that was her main form of income. She's also a single mother. And from there, the government kind of started to ask, well, which cities did he take you to? Did he pay you money often? To which she testified, you know, he paid me money frequently. He ended up paying her rent at some point. And eventually, about 3 or 4 months into their relationship, that's when he brought up being with another man. And he said this was a fantasy. And she said, okay. She didn't think that he was actually serious. Well, it turns out he was serious. She went to the bathroom, and this was after they had already been engaging in sexual activity for 12 to 15 hours prior. He goes and he calls someone he knows named Dawn and arranges Dawn for that very night. And then she describes going to a hotel room that night in Miami, corroborated the oil, the assistant setting it up, and then said she engaged in this act with Dawn while Diddy watched. Again, what we've heard before. And then after that, she said it was pretty much a door that was opened that she couldn't close. She testified telling him in writing numerous times that she didn't want to be with other men. She wanted to be with him, but because he was paying her rent, she felt obligated. She said her only form of income, because she always had to be constantly ready for Diddy, was Diddy's money that he was sending to her and the child support she was getting.
Okay. Could you tell me how the jury was reacting, Lauren Conlon?
The defense was actually admonished today when the judge warned them that Diddy was actually looking at the jury and kind of nodding his head during Nicole Westmoreland's cross-examination of Brianna Bongolin. Apparently, he had gotten this warning before, and the judge told the defense if he does this again, he will be removed from the courtroom.
Joining me now, a special guest, longtime friend and colleague, Rob Shooter. Rob was Sean Combs' PR guru for years. He no longer works for him. Thank goodness. Or I'd be grilling you even worse. Rob Shooter, host of Naughty But Nice podcast. That's at robshooter.substack.com, author of The Four-Word Answer. Rob, I want to talk about what Mia has been saying on the stand all day and for several days. The fact that she lived in fear. You know, I believe it was you that first told me that Sean Combs ordered somebody to go get him a cheesecake at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they did it. They found a place that was open. They got the cheesecake and brought it back to Sean Combs. It seems as if he was very imperious with his employees to the fact that Mia describes PTSD. That's what she's describing. I've seen it in a lot of crime victims. Describe what you witnessed.
My time working with Diddy was extraordinary, Nancy. I've never had a job. I've never experienced anything like that again. And I've gone on to work with stars even bigger than him. It was really gruesome. It wasn't a job. It was a life. He took over your life. He demanded you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He could be really bullying. He could also be very charming. And so I understand everything that Mia's saying. It's heartbreaking, and it's an experience that very, very few, thankfully, will ever know.
Okay, I want to get back to these demands, because if he could make a grown person get out of bed at 3 a.m. and traverse Manhattan to get him a slice of cheesecake. And it had to be the best cheesecake. It couldn't be any crap that could get down at the D'Agostino's, right? What could he make someone like Mia do, who was already meek and mild and traumatized? I mean, I want to hear what it was like. You say it was a way of life. It was your life. Why?
It was our lives because we were young. He had picked people to work with him that he could control. There was nobody on his staff, including me, that was terribly experienced. It was all about him. He carefully groomed us all. He carefully selected us all. And if anybody came into his world who said no, who was too experienced, who knew better, they didn't last. He was the ringmaster, and we played along in his circus.
Rob Shooter, you stated that Sean Combs has a very carefully choreographed personal image. And you told a story about making the press move at a private airport. I guess it was Teterboro. So as they all filmed Sean Combs pulling up, at first you didn't see the private plane. And he was so angry. He actually single-handedly made all the press move where they were standing so he could re-enter Teterboro. So when he got out of his SUV, you could see the private plane behind him. Describe.
Yeah, absolutely true. I was on the tarmac. The press was lined up waiting for him. Everybody from national shows to local press. And he drove up in his car and he realized they were shooting this ugly airport terminal behind him. And he wanted a shot of this very, very expensive private plane. So what he did is he left. He restaged his entrance. We spun the press around and we had to go down that line, Nancy, and make sure every member of the press who were videoing deleted their original footage. So we did not leave this to chance. It was something that he had thought of. I wouldn't have thought about this, but he told me, make sure they've all deleted the footage I don't want. I don't want to give them the choice of deciding which footage to use. They'll use the one that I give them.
So he got an entire fleet of the media to change their positions and delete video. I'm making a point. Listen to this, Shooter.
Brian Steele shows Mia a birthday shout-out from Combs, captioned, "Beside every great man is a great woman. P.S. Sorry I was acting crazy last night." Mia says Combs had threatened her life on a phone call the night before, and she took this as his apology. Steele asks if she reposted the message despite the seriousness of the threat, and Mia responds, "Of course," reading off her profusely thankful caption, "Thanks, Puff. Love you. You've shown me the world."
So you're hearing, Rob Shooter, the posts that Mia is making about a birthday wish, and then she gets cross-examined about wishing Sean Combs happy birthday on a post. Now, I have seen rape victims go along to get along, whether it was your employer forcing sex on you, husband, partner, judge. And you don't want to make waves in the courthouse, so you put up with it and you just keep going. But he's really tearing her up on the stand about this shooter. What do you make of it? You know him.
Yeah, I think this is directed by Diddy. I think Puff is running this entire trial. He's telling his lawyers what to do, which might be a mistake, but his ego is very, very big. And newsflash here, Nancy, it is possible to think love a monster. A person can be a terrible person and you can still have feelings towards them. And I think that's a mistake here that Diddy is making. I think people know the difference. And just because I post something, a birthday message, something kind towards you, doesn't mean you can't also be a terrible human being.
Rob Shooter, are you surprised that Sean Combs has been able to keep so many alleged victims quiet for so long? We've seen multiple civil lawsuits occur after Cassie Ventura came out, and we are asking the wrong questions. We're saying, why are you suing him for money? You're in it just for the money, Cassie Ventura or Mia. Instead of asking the question, why is Sean Combs paying millions and millions of dollars to keep these victims quiet? Why do you think so many victims have gone unheard until now? Maybe because of what we see happening to Mia on the stand?
Yeah. I think there's going to be, that we've seen, there's a long history of this. Money, power, fame are all really intoxicating. If you can't bully them with your fame, then you throw money at the problems. And I think we have to be honest here. The tape of Cassie changed everything. Once that videotape existed, Nancy, we saw what happened when somebody tried to leave. We saw Cassie running down a hallway. She's trying to get away from him. And look what happened to her. That's why people didn't leave. It wasn't just the money, wasn't just the fame, wasn't just the power. Nancy, it was the violence.
Joining me right now, entertainment legal affair commentator, host of podcast, The Armaan Wiggins Show. Armaan Wiggins, thank you for being with us. What's your takeaway from today, Friday, in the courtroom?
Thanks for asking, Nancy. So for me, the biggest takeaway, honestly, is just the fact that he didn't love that girl like she loved him. At the end of the day, I think that she was looking for a relationship. She was looking for a boyfriend. She was looking for a husband. She was looking for a lover. She kept reiterating that she was doing things for her lover. She was doing things for her partner. She was doing things for her man. She would bathe him after they would have these hotel nights. She would cook for him after they do these hotel nights. She would put on his favorite TV shows after she would do this hotel nights. And she would do majority of all the work in these hotel nights. And at the end of the night, she would finally get to have some alone time with Diddy. I think that at the end of the day, she wanted a relationship. She wanted a husband. He didn't want that. He wanted a freak-off partner. He wanted a sex slave. And he wanted to get his freaky fetishes off with her through other men.
Armaan, I'm curious, what do you think was the strongest evidence for the state this past week in the case against Sean Combs?
Right now, as of the break, the strongest evidence so far for me was a video audio recording. So there actually was a video, but they played the audio of where there was a hookup night at the hotel nights where Diddy, Jane Doe, and one of the male escorts was there. And Jane Doe was wanting to put on a condom. And Diddy was saying, no, you've already been taking that D. Why do you want a condom now? So I think that was the first time we actually got to hear some actual hotel night freak off information. And so to hear her asking for condoms and Diddy not wanting her to actually use the condom was very powerful, because it goes to the fact that, hey, he didn't want me to use these condoms, and I didn't use the condoms because I just wanted to make my partner happy. And you could hear Diddy in the back saying, just let's get to it. Let's keep it moving.
Sean Combs, a.k.a. Diddy, allegedly paid off an employee to the tune of $100,000 to get that Cassie Ventura video. Let's take a look at the Cassie Ventura beatdown video. Now, it was speculated upon so much in the press. Where did the video come from? Did it come from the raid on Diddy's mansion? Did he have it there? Where did it come from? Wow. You wonder why he paid $100,000? Did he think it would never come to light? Busted! In court, sworn testimony that Sean Combs paid $100,000 to get his mitts on this video. And this video was like pulling the tiger by the tail. You can't hold on and you can't let go. Because once the feds saw this, they had to do something. The statute of limitations had run in the local jurisdiction, so it was up to the feds. And what were they going to do? Stand there with their thumb up their rear end? No, they had to act. Ergo, therefore, the multi-count federal indictment. What was Sean Combs' reaction typically when he doesn't get his way? Because in court, when he was watching Brian Steele, who's a very, very good trial lawyer, he's a great defense attorney, right? I've watched him in action. So Steele started off with Mia with the Andy and Mayberry approach, trying to get the answers, but yet being genial to her. He didn't want to beat up on Mia. And you could see Sean Combs going, moving around and twisting around and holding his face and all that. I mean, the jury could see him. And then suddenly, Brian Steele has a change of heart. I mean, you can imagine if Diddy is steering that ship. Then he gets really mean to Mia. Steele does. So Diddy not getting what he wants. Can you imagine how angry he was when he finds out that was $100,000 right down the crapper? There was another copy.
Yeah, I'm sure he was absolutely furious. Let me tell you a little bit of a secret here about Puffy. For somebody with all the money that he has, he's incredibly cheap. He never wanted to pay for anything he didn't have to pay for. He wanted to get free clothes, free dinners, free tickets if he went out to clubs, restaurants. He just didn't want to pay for stuff. And so for him to have to reach into his own pocket and pay $100,000, which I think for that tape is incredibly cheap. That tape is going to change his life. And so it was worth tens of millions of dollars. For him to get it for $100,000 cheap and then to find out he didn't get it all, there was another copy, he will have exploded.
I'm just imagining when Sean Combs finds out there's another video floating around. Robert Crispin joining me, private investigator, was with former federal task force officer for the U.S. Department of Justice in the Miami Field Division. They're not sitting around twiddling their thumbs. Former homicide crimes against children investigator. He is now at CrispinInvestigations.com. Crispin, don't you just hate it when you blackmail somebody to the tune of $100,000 and there's another video floating around? Ruh-roh!
I mean, really, come on, think about it. Do you really think that no one else was going to have a video of Diddy kicking the hell out of somebody? Especially Cassie Ventura? Come on. So here's the beauty of all this with the government. This Castigard letter stuff, this king for a day, queen for a day, they need people to give testimony in lieu of being indicted to say what happened.
Standing by is investigative reporter Lauren Conlon. She's been in the courtroom all day long. Star of Pop Crime TV. What a bomb, a stink bomb for the defense dropped right in the middle of that
clutch of lawyers, $100,000 Diddy bucks paid off for bribery. Bribery, which, as Romani pointed out, is a predicate act. You have to have an underlying felony or predicate act to prove RICO. Tell me how that went over in the courtroom.
Yes, Nancy, we started off by getting a really big interruption by a woman that works for the MTA. The entire courtroom turned around. This is before Eddie Garcia, the witness, walked in. But that was quite a moment. She was screaming at the press, saying that the press is awful and the press is laughing at Diddy. And you should have seen Diddy's face as well as everyone in the courtroom. We were all in shock. But back to Eddie Garcia, I mean, this testimony was incredibly important to this case, as you know. He testified that he received multiple calls from Christina Corum, Diddy's assistant, before she eventually passed the phone over to Sean Combs himself. Eddie Garcia described talking to him, saying, you know, look, I already told your assistant here, but I don't have any clearance to obtain this video that you want me to obtain. I cannot go in this room. Only my boss can do that. And he described Diddy kind of just buttering him up, saying, you know, I know you can do it, Eddie. I believe in you type of thing. And he also described Diddy as being very nervous seeming on the phone, saying, look, this could destroy my reputation if it gets out. Now, he said, okay, you know, I'll talk to my boss, et cetera. And this was actually after receiving a call from Diddy and Christina on his cell phone. They started off by calling him at the general security desk. They somehow got his cell phone, which he said did make him a little bit nervous. And he said that, you know, he talked to his boss and he said, look, this is what's going on. They want this video. And his boss said, okay, tell him $50,000. They make this meeting happen where Diddy tells him a meeting place. He goes and gets this black USB from his boss at the Intercontinental. And he goes and he meets with Diddy. And he describes being taken up to this room by one of Diddy's security guards. He meets with Christina Corum and then eventually Diddy. And he says that after some back and forth, Diddy requested the IDs of Eddie Garcia and his boss and another gentleman. And one of the first testimonies we heard, I think it actually was the first one, was Israel Flores, who also was on duty that day. But Eddie Garcia said, I don't think that Israel Flores is going to go for this. So they got the ID of somebody else. And they texted these to him. He went in another room, came back, got an NDA. Eddie Garcia had to sign this NDA. And then eventually Diddy came back with a brown bag of money and a money counter. And he did not get $50,000. He got $100,000. And he also said that about 2 weeks later, it was Easter. Diddy called him again to check in, saying, Eddie, my angel, you know, how are you? Have you heard anything or anybody mention this video at all? And he said no. And that was that.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Could you tell me what this reaction in the courtroom when it came out from not one but two witnesses that Combs had bribed $100,000 to get that video?
I'd say today the jury is much more reserved than they were while listening to Mia. I mean, this is important testimony. So they are listening intently. I would say their heads kind of go back and forth between the lawyer and the witness, you know, appropriately. And they look at the documents that they're reading. We saw multiple times the NDA on the screen. And these jurors, they were reading it. They wanted to catch every word here.
You know, I'm very curious to Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, psychoanalyst out of L.A. and author. Dr. Bethany, to hear what she's saying, what Lauren Conlon is stating, to finally be hit with reality that you've been uncovered in a bribe. And what's so important about the bribe, not just bribery on its own, but it serves as a required underlying felony to show RICO. And you know, Sean Combs knows that, and it's just pouring from the witness stand.
Well, you know, he can beat down Cassie Ventura, but he can't beat down the prosecution. He cannot beat down the feds. And this is the telling moment for him. I wish I had like a a monitor to rate his, to measure his perspiration rate, his heart rate, to see what he's really going through. I bet he's flooded right now. I bet he's enraged, like Rob Shooter talked about, the veins bulging out. He is probably enraged. He doesn't feel guilty. He doesn't feel worried, Nancy. He is mad, and he's not going to be able to get away with this once he's incarcerated. He's going to have plenty of incidents when he's called on bad behavior, and there's nothing he's going to be able to do about it. You can't buy your way out of it once you're incarcerated. And this interaction about the $100,000 bribe, you know, this is just one iteration of many incidences where he's bought people off.
Joining us, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know now. It has been a long day in the courtroom. Straight out to Hermania Rodriguez. She is the chief U.S. reporter with DailyMail.com podcast titled The Trial of Diddy, in which she stars. Hermania, thank you for being with us. First thing this morning, we saw a videographer expert on the stand. What was the point?
Right. Today, first thing in the morning, a video expert, his name is Frank Piazza, took the stand for the prosecution. And he said he analyzed cell phone footage, surveillance footage, and also sex videos. On the stand, he's basically giving these videos legitimacy because, as we know, Diddy's attorneys, particularly with the LA assault 2016 video, they have suggested and put the idea out there that these videos have been edited by CNN. They have been sped up. So this expert was basically there to tell the jury these videos are legitimate. They have not been messed with, and you should trust them, essentially.
You know, from the get-go, straight out to Greg Morse joining us, veteran criminal defense attorney. He is the lead partner at Morse Legal and author of The Untested on Amazon. Greg Morse, I believe there was a time that you suggested that the Freakoff videos were a myth, that they were lore, that they didn't exist. Well, buckle your seatbelt, because this expert on the stand that Hermania just described is laying the foundation. What does that mean? Whenever you bring in a video, an audio recording, really any piece of physical evidence at all, be it drugs or a picture or an article of clothing, you have to lay the foundation. I can't just go in and go, hey, judge, can I bring in these notes? No, you have to say, you have to have a witness under oath say, what is the object? What is the exhibit? Where did it come from? What's the chain of custody? I haven't been leaving it out on Third Avenue in downtown Manhattan where anybody could change it. You've got to show that it hasn't been tampered with, and the chain of custody, who's held it, who's been in charge of it, is complete. There's not a break in the chain, and what it purports to be. That gives the other side a chance to object on any of those grounds. So it's happening, Morse. This is the beginning of the admission into evidence of the Freakoff tapes, which you at one time said was just a myth, that they didn't really exist.
No.
As if it didn't happen. Yes, you did.
Well, it does. Okay, they can introduce the Freakoff videos again. It doesn't mean sex trafficking and a RICO happened here. And testimony yesterday shows that from victim number two. So they can introduce these videos. A lot of people want to keep their sex lives private. Doctors, lawyers, famous people. These things are not, doesn't move the needle to sex trafficking yet. So they can introduce all the videos they want, but their core of their indictment is centered around the domestic abuse video where Miss Ventura is being beaten in that hotel lobby or hallway by P. Diddy. But so the Freakoff videos,
Morse,
are going to come in. When are we going to hear about young people?
Morse,
when are we going to hear about
Morse,
drugged people?
I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. First of all, you said, I don't know if these Freakoffs really happened. And if they did happen, there's not a video. Now, we've heard testimony about the Freakoffs, and we're laying the foundation right now, the state is, to introduce those Freakoff videos. Didn't you just hear Hermania Rodriguez say, this expert says he is an expert in, is going to address cell phone videos, surveillance videos, that's the intercontinental beatdown, and sex tapes. What other sex tape? It's got to be the Freakoffs. They're coming into evidence. And from what I understand, straight out to Sydney Sumner joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter on the case from the beginning, like Hermonia. Sydney, these are not all consenting adults and engaging in an orgy or group sex. I guess the new term would be polyamorous. That's not what the state is alleging, Sydney.
Absolutely not, Nancy. They're alleging that these women or men or all participants who may or may not have been adults. We've seen many minor allegations come out in lawsuits, but SDNY is not specifically arguing that Combs targeted minors. Anyways, the state, the government is claiming that these victims were coerced in one way, shape, or another, whether that was by financial control, blackmail, the threat, or follow through of physical violence. Combs used coercion to get what he wanted, to get these sex parties, these freak-offs. This was not something that somebody wanted and actively was interested in doing.
I mean, Greg Morse, I don't know. Are you deaf, dumb, and blind? Didn't you hear the testimony that when Cassie Ventura was getting beaten in the hallway of the Intercontinental and dragged back, it was dragged back to a room where she was being coerced into having sex with a sex worker. And she was trying to run away.
You're making up
in
testimony.
What world
you're making up
is
testimony.
Is that consensual sex?
All you're doing is making up testimony. I'm right. That's what I am. Because so far, the prosecution hasn't produced any testimony that says victim number one or victim number two were coerced or forced or through fraud. This is, you know, people made choices in this situation from their own mouth. Ms. Ventura testified from her own mouth. Yeah, I didn't always like the freak-offs, but I did them. You had another witness. Okay, Ms. Ventura paid me for the freak-off. Again, things are being shoved in under a criminal indictment to things that people do. We may look at it and say, I would never do that. I would never want to be involved
evidence.
In that.
But let's review the
some people
evidence.
Do.
Sydney Sumner joining us from Crime Stories. Sydney, isn't it true that Cassie Ventura testified that she was being dragged back to the room? And what was happening in the room, number one, and number two, isn't it true when the security guard, who we see in the video, went back to the room, he sees another guy in there. That's the sex worker.
That's correct, Nancy. So that's what we heard from Israel Flores and Cassie about that situation. Flores claimed that there was another man in the room, and he didn't make any note of that man being in the room because he was not directly involved in Sean Combs and Cassie's altercation. So he left that out of his incident report about the situation because he was irrelevant at the time. But now, coming back to testimony combined with what Cassie Ventura said on the stand, that becomes incredibly important because it backs up the fact that she said she was running away from a freak-off.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. So, Morse, do you think Sydney Sumner, she doesn't have a dog in the fight, no skin in the game, you think she's lying?
So she gives inconsistent statements. There's a conflict in the evidence, clearly, because she said it was consensual many times. And when the jury is charged at the end of this case, they're going to be told. Nancy, you know, they're going to be told what reasonable doubt is. Conflict in the evidence.
Yes, I know that. But I also know what Cassie Ventura's testimony. You know what? That is my, I can't take it anymore. While Sean Combs' family prepares their documentary to air after the verdict and his enablers prepare his comeback tour when he is found not guilty, according to them, not according to me, a lot of people have been deified. Joining me is a special guest. It's Armon Wiggins, entertainment legal affairs commentator, host of podcast The Armon Wiggins Show. And I want you to see what happened to him outside the courthouse.
Oh, okay. Clock that. Clock that. Let's go viral in this. Let's go viral.
This is crazy.
Or what?
Okay, that from our friends at TMZ, Harvey Levin. You know, Armon Wiggins, please don't laugh, because you never know when somebody comes up to you on the street and starts screaming at you, whether they are high on meth, whether they have a gun. So, you know what? Next time, please just don't engage. Don't be the hero. Just say, thank you, and walk away. But yet, you engaged. Armon Wiggins, what was she screaming?
Honestly, she just was trying to go viral. She was screaming, let's go viral, mother. She was saying a bunch of flagrant obscenities to me. And I think it was just because she saw me going live. This court, this case has become a zoo and a breeding ground for all walks of life. And people are just coming. They're trying to get their piece of the moment, their piece of the viral moment, and just shouting out and making stuff up. So there was a woman that got put out of the courtroom. This woman was heckling. So it was actually, I didn't even know who this woman was. She just saw me on live camera. She figured, okay, this is a content creator. He goes viral for his Diddy News. And let me go and trash him in his live feed. And hopefully I'll make the news.
A lot of people are, well, they've been diddified. And without knowing any of the evidence or ignoring the little bit of evidence they do know, they're convinced that Sean Combs is innocent. You know, I got into it with Ray J again, but I want you to hear, you mentioned a woman that got dragged out of court by armed guards. Well, listen to her.
Diddy, everyone thinks this is a joke, laughing at black man legacy being destroyed. Everyone has been laughing. I don't care if it sounded funny. It's not funny.
No, it's not funny for women to get beaten, raped, drugged, dragged over and over and over. And it's not just one woman. It's not just Cassie Ventura. It's one after the next after the next. That was from our friends at BBC on TikTok. Back to you, Armon Wiggins, who was assaulted outside of the courthouse. I just heard her talking about the legacy of Sean Combs and wrapping it into the legacy of black men, that they should not be wrongfully attacked. What about black women? What about them? Do they not matter in the black legacy? What about them? What about all the women that we're hearing from? What about Capricorn Clark? What about one after the next woman of color that has gotten a beating from Sean Combs? And do you know how close it was for this woman hanging off a balcony by high on something, Sean Combs, but yet no one seems to hear that? What about these women and the legacy of Sean Combs? Are you kidding me? It sounds like exactly what Ray J and I were arguing about on TMZ. You're saying the same thing. He's not crazy.
Well, you know, Ray J was just mentioned in the
Ray.
Ray J was mentioned in the court documents as Cassie's drug dealer, too, yesterday. So there might be some affiliation there. But, you know, I talked to Ray J. Ray J said they had nothing to do with him, and he's not sure why Diddy's team is mentioning him. I don't know what that relationship is. But in regards to the women, I think that the prosecution is doing a great job, because one thing that we cannot get around is whenever they played that video and when they got into that forensic audio and video and you saw Cassie being yoked up and dragged, I don't care what you're talking about as far as Diddy's legacy, you have a heart, you have an emotion, and you feel every blow, every kick. And so I think that everybody in that room, man, woman, child, they felt that. And there's no way that he's getting around that. And the prosecution makes sure every day they play that video, just in case you may have forgotten what we're really here for.
Philip Dubay is joining me, veteran trial lawyer out of the L.A. jurisdiction. Dubay, we're seeing a whole nother animal right now. We've heard about beatings and draggings and yanking people by their hair and kicking them. And that's something that a lot of people see, whether it's in the movies, whether they've seen it in real life. But dangling someone off a 17th floor balcony, that's a whole other thing that really can't be made up.
No, of course not. But how I would play it if I were his counsel is, like you said earlier, is it real or is it just real testimony? Because if you remember, it came out that she was hooked on ketamine and all kinds of other drugs that are various types of anesthetics that put you in a trance-like state, almost in a twilight state. So who really knows what, if anything, she accurately remembers? And it is not...
If she and Cassie were doing drugs, where do you think they got those drugs, Dubay?
Let's give them that.
From Cal?
Let's pretend... Let's really pretend he was plying them with dope. It is not his MO to be defenestrating people. It's just simply not the case. But I think better yet for him, better yet, is that just because he is in a respondeat superior mob boss, he can be acting in his individual maniacal capacity unmedicated. That does not fall under RICO. It falls under state crimes, and the statutes of limitation have run. So what the feds are doing is they're using RICO as an end run around the state statute of limitations that local DAs blew.
You know, the more the defense objects to any particular line of questioning, the more sensitive it is, right? The more you scream at the dentist office is because that's the more it hurts. Right there on that particular tooth. And they went after this witness tooth and nail. To Lauren Conlon, there was quite a cross-examination of her on the stand. What happened?
During Nicole Westmoreland's cross-examination of Brianna Bongolin, she also got her to say that after a week after the alleged balcony incident, Brianna was going to private parties with Sean Combs, and she was actually texting back and forth with Cassie a few days later about having a sleepover. So Westmoreland said to her, you know, this horrible thing happened to you, and a week later, you're willing to go back and have a sleepover. And Bongolin just said, I guess so. And there was some tense moments going back and forth because of her original civil suit. She did fire her attorney, Tyrone Blackburn. He came up a number of times today because she said that he kind of misinterpreted what she said and alleged some kind of sexual assault happened, or did he groped her when lifting her up as he allegedly dangled her. And Westmoreland said, well, you know, you fired Blackburn, but you still perpetuated this lie, so to speak, with your other attorneys in that lawsuit and your new updated lawsuit as well, did you not? And, you know, she kind of said, well, I didn't write all of that in the new lawsuit. My attorneys did. So it was just a lot of back and forth about that and very tense. I'm not going to say it was hostile, but it was uncomfortable and it was aggressive.
And now we remember an American hero, Officer Helen Smith, North Carolina Department of Public Safety, passed away in the line of duty, survived by grieving husband, Tony, and children, Andrew and Samantha, sentenced to life without their mother. American hero, Correctional Officer Helen Smith. Thank you to our guests for being with us, but especially to you, for being with us tonight and every night. Nancy Gray signing off. I'll see you tomorrow night, 6 to 9 o'clock sharp Eastern. And until then, good night, friend.